Hi, I'm John Weber. My guest today is vocalist Cecile McLaurin-Salvan, who is gaining tremendous renown in Europe and the U.S. Radio France describes her voice as disarmingly musical, with the class of Sarah Vaughan, the instinct of Betty Carter, and the dark lows of Carmen McRae. Winner of the 2010 Thelonious Monk competition, she's played with some of the top musicians working today, including pianist Aaron Deal and Wynton Marsalis, along with the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra. Cecile, welcome to Piano Jazz.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
You know, many people your age, and if I can say this, you were born in 1989.
Yeah.
Many people your age are listening to 21st century music. Now, what is it that draws you so favorably to music from the 20th century?
Well, I do like some 21st century music, but I also like, you know, 17th century music. I like, if the music is good, I like it. And there's something about early 20th century music, music from the 1920s, 30s. I guess there's something very mysterious about it and very beautiful and at the same time very raw in a way. And so I think those are elements that attract me to it. But, you know, who knows? Maybe I need to go for some therapy and see what it is, you know. But
we all do. But did you hear it at home? I mean, where were you introduced to this music that obviously predates you by many decades or centuries in some cases?
Well, I was brought up in a family of people who really love music. My father is Haitian, my mom is French, and my mom traveled all over the world when she was a child. And so we had a variety of different music at home. We had Cuban music, Dominican music, Haitian music, Guadeloupean music. I mean, we had opera, we had fado, we had, you know, I could keep going. And we had, of course, the great American music of the 20th century, but not too much stuff from the 20s or the 30s. It's only when I got to France at the age of 18 that I met a teacher whose name is Jean-François Bonnel, who actually started to lend me his CDs. And he lent me Bessie Smith, her complete discography. And that's when I started kind of discovering this music and really enjoying it and really, really, you know, learning new tunes and really liking what I was hearing.
See, I think it's just a natural inclination for a lot of young people to distance themselves from the music that their parents or grandparents liked, you know, to establish their independence. But you completely wrap yourself and your arms around, you embrace this nostalgic time and place, this music that your parents and your grandparents listened to and that you heard around the house. You've made a life and a career out of it already.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but I mean, honestly, my mom never listened to Bessie Smith. My grandma didn't know about Bessie Smith. You know, my French grandma, my Haitian grandma, I don't think listened to any Bessie Smith either. So it was kind of a personal thing. And now everybody listens to Bessie Smith in my you know, house, in my family's house. But it was kind of something that I did alone, you know, that I didn't do from my family. So I think maybe that's what was in part attractive to me. But I don't feel that I have to reject what my parents or my grandparents listen to, because they listen to great music. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm lucky that I can listen to these things that they listened to.
Well, I'm lucky to listen to you today. We're going to do some tunes, but we should get right into one. Do you know any Duke Ellington tunes?
I do. I just want to say, first of all, that Duke Ellington is probably one of my favorite musicians, but mostly he's my favorite, I think one of my favorite pianists, jazz pianists. I love his playing. I mean, I know everyone talks about his band and, you know, his arranging and stuff, but I love his playing. So I guess we could do something by him.
What do you think? What are you feeling?
Maybe Sophisticated Lady could be good.
All right, let's do it.
They say into your early life romance came, and in this heart of yours burned a flame that flickered one day and died away. And then, with disillusion deep in your eyes, you learn that fools in love soon grow wise. The years have changed you somehow. I see you now. Smoking, drinking, never thinking of tomorrow, nonchalant, diamonds shining, dancing, dining with some man in a restaurant. Is that all you really want? No, no, no. Sophisticated lady, I know you miss the love you lost long ago. And when nobody is nigh, you cry. Thinking of tomorrow, diamonds shining, dancing, dining with some man in a restaurant. Is that all you really want? No. Sophisticated lady, I know you miss the love you lost long ago, and when nobody is nigh,
Cecile, that was breathtaking.
Oh, thank you so, so much.
I wish Duke had heard that.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you sound and breathe as though you've had a tremendous amount of vocal training. I mean, did you study classical voice?
I did. When I was about 12, I think, I saw Charlotte Church on TV singing with this like choir and this orchestra. And she was about, you know, my age or a couple years older, something like that. Maybe I was younger, actually. Maybe I was 10. But yeah, I saw her and I immediately thought that would be so great if I could do that, if I could just sing some classical piece and have like an orchestra. And so I told my mom this and she immediately started looking for teachers, people who would maybe teach me, you know, the rudiments of classical voice, which it's, you know, when you're 12, it's way too young to start. And I had already been in a children's choir. So we started looking for teachers and then we eventually found someone and I started taking classical voice lessons with her at about the age of, I believe I was 13, but it wasn't really classical voice. It was just, you know, basic voice technique, I would say. She was a classical singer. And then I continued with a teacher at the University of Miami named Ed Walker, who continued to teach me. And then when I moved to France at the age of 18, I kept doing classical voice. And I really wanted to, you know, to try it and to maybe try to do something professionally with it, maybe. But I wasn't, you know, I didn't have that many great ambitions with my classical voice. But I still wanted to continue and see where it took me. And it's only at the conservatory where I had originally signed up to go to my classical voice class that I met the jazz teacher. And that's when I started really singing jazz. I met him. It's the first time I saw, you know, a bass player that was actually playing with me. You know, it was first time I went on stage for a concert was thanks to him. He booked my first concert. And that was when I was about 18. So yeah, it wasn't too long ago, I guess.
Did you sing a ballad or an up-tempo? Was it something from the...
For my audition, I remember singing Lullaby of Birdland and Misty, just because those are two tracks that I had on repeat for a long time and that my mom has had on repeat for many years before that. So those were the two songs that I sang, and then I started to get into Ella Fitzgerald and Billie Holiday and Abby Lincoln and Bessie Smith, and he would just give me all of his records and, I mean, CDs. And I started to really listen to a lot of music.
So there you were at this audition, and you opened your mouth and suddenly channeled Carmen McRae.
Among others. But yeah, Carmen McRae was someone that Jean-François Bonnel, my teacher, introduced me to. He told me, you need to really check this woman out because she really sings the lyrics like for real. It's like, it's crazy. She's almost talking to you, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I fell in love with her and I got obsessed with everything that she did. And I listened to everything that she put out. And there's this amazing song that she wrote. And she wrote it for Billie Holiday. Billie Holiday sang this song with Teddy Wilson. This is called Dream of Life. And I'd love to sing it with you if you'd like.
I'll try to channel my best Teddy Wilson.
My life was empty when you went away. Even the blue skies above had turned gray. But now that you've come back, my dream of life is here to stay. Those little quarrels that tore us apart Gee, I don't know, they were wrong from the start. But now that you've come back, my dream of life is here to stay. I can't seem to see just what you see in me. I guess that love is really blind. This world is so grand now that you understand. It's you I live for, it's you I adore. Life is sublime now that you're here with me. Please keep it in rhyme, dear, and don't stray from me. For now that you've come back, my dream of life is here to stay. I can't seem to see what you see in me. I guess that love is really blind. This world is so grand now that you understand. It's you I live for, it's you I adore. Life is sublime now that you're here with me. Please keep it in rhyme, dear, and don't stray from me. For now that you've come back, my dream of life is here to stay.
That was so beautifully done.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. It was fun.
And who wrote the music? I'm trying to remember. Carmen
wrote the lyrics, and Luther Henderson wrote the music for that.
Carmen wrote it and Billy recorded. What an honor.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure she must have been going crazy about that because Billie Holiday was such a huge influence on her. So,
at what age did you realize that Billie Holiday was somebody really important?
Well, I had always heard Billie Holiday's music from a very young age. We actually have a home video that's really hilarious of my family. I was a baby at this time, but my dad, my mom, and I think my aunt doing some kind of like lip syncing to Don't Explain. Yeah. And they're all like wearing lipstick and trying to, you know, skip that lipstick and trying to act all, all, you know, sensual and angry. And so I do remember having Billie Holiday be kind of a part of the household, but I was always a little bit scared of her because when I was small, I thought she sounded a little bit like an old witch or something, you know, because we would listen to the older records and her voice was kind of going, and it you know, for me as a child, it was a little bit scary. And then I started to get into her when I was in France, to really get into her music. And I remember just only listening to that for months and months and months on repeat. And discovering songs of hers that are not as well known, that people don't sing, and that are so beautiful, just like this wonderful song that she did called "Deep Song," which is amazing, and another one called "I Wonder Where Our Love Has Gone," and those two songs. I mean, if you can check those out. If you haven't already, they're amazing. And there's so just so much, yeah. So much in what she did. So,
Cecile, you know, I love the fact that the tunes which appeal to you most aren't played every day. Now, you do much less recorded every day. In other words, those tunes that you were talking about, you know, Deep Song, and they're often a side street in the American popular songbook. You know, and what I admire most about your song choice is that you're not just covering tunes, you're uncovering them a lot of times. And when you perform a show dedicated to the music of Una Mae Carlisle or Valida Snow, these aren't the most profitable songs ever written. I mean, what is it that draws you to resurrect these under-recognized performers rather than play it safe?
Well, there's this great festival in England called the Whitley Bay Festival, and they have about, I don't know how many concerts a day, but it starts at 10 in the morning and it ends at like midnight. And what they do is tributes to singers and music, you know, to just jazz musicians of the 20s and 30s. And I was invited there for the first time about, I don't know, 3 years ago, maybe. And that's the first time I had to organize a tribute concert. And so we did Bessie Smith and Billie Holiday. And it was really great because I was able to really get into these singers and get into what they were doing and discovering these tunes that are lesser known and really, really trying to understand what it was they were doing. And about 2 years ago, I did a tribute to Valida Snow at that festival because she's just such a great figure of jazz of that era, but she's unfortunately forgotten. I mean, Louis Armstrong was a fan of her trumpet playing, so that's, you know, that's saying a lot. She was a multi-instrumentalist. She was a great entertainer, but there's not too much left. You can't find that many videos of her on YouTube, for instance, and there's not too much left for us to consume of hers. When I started listening to her music and hearing how vibrant and how fun and how great she was, it was kind of a revelation to me because I kind of figured out that there are so many different ways of singing and she kind of uncovered another way of singing to me. And so it's always great to discover someone. I mean, I say new, but she's long gone, but to discover something like that. And anytime I do, I try to share that with my audience just because they might not have the access to that music, to those tunes, to those fun lyrics, or to that whole atmosphere. So if I can share that, then I try to as much as I can.
And she was a French speaker too. Valida Snow wasn't she not?
I believe so. She lived in Europe for quite a bit, and she had a pretty crazy life. She was there during World War II, and she was, I mean, I think the Nazis got her. I mean, it's a whole crazy story.
She sort of rose through the ranks with Josephine Baker and that whole Chocolate Dandies show in 1924, the E.B. Blake. Well, I would be honored to perform a Valida Snow song with you. What do you think? What should we do?
Well, I think we could probably do this really fun song that she did called I Can't Dance, I've Got Ants in My Pants.
I love it.
Let's go down to the drummer's club. You take the streetcar and I'll take the sub. Let's have a party and let's spread good cheer. Oh, you bring the pretzels and I'll bring the beer. Zazogee. Here's the reason why I can't dance. I've got ants in my pants. I can't dance. I got ants in my pants. Let's go down to the drummer's club. You take the streetcar and I'll take the sub. Let's have a party and let's spread good cheer. You bring the hot dogs, I'll bring the beer. Thank you. club. Let's have a party and let's spread good cheer. Oh, you bring the hot dogs and I'll bring the beers. Yes. Oh, gee, ooh, my, here's the reason why I can't dance. I got ants in my pants. Oh, I can't dance. I got ants in my pants.
Wow, Cecile, I wanted to get up and dance after that one.
Thank you.
And I can't dance. I have ants in my pants. It's cute. It's just so energetic. It just makes me happy.
What's good, I think, is that sometimes we forget that, you know, this music can be a party music and like a fun, like we're all having, you know, pretzels and beer and chilling with our friends. And sometimes we forget that. We forget the humor that can be in the music, too. And it's nice to remind ourselves, I guess.
It's a really, really wonderful song. I like it a lot. Well, there's more coming up with singer Cecile McLaurin-Salvant. I'm John Weber, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR Music. Now, Cecile, in 2010, you won the very prestigious Thelonious Monk Vocal Jazz Competition, and you did some beautiful, beautiful singing. I mean, as a vocalist and a frontman, tell me about the competition, first of all. How many songs did you do, and what did they ask of you?
Well, there are two rounds, I guess. You could call them rounds for that competition. At the semifinals, you have to present three songs, they suggest you have 15 minutes, and they suggest three songs, and one of them has to be a Thelonious Monk composition. So I chose as a monk composition. I chose Monk's Mood, which was a really beautiful sort of ballad that he wrote, and with these lyrics by a singer named Sosia Citroën. I actually had been looking for monk lyrics that I felt would really represent sort of the mood of the song. And I thought her lyrics were just so beautifully crafted and so appropriate that it was just perfect. I was really happy I found that. And I also sang Bernie's Tune and a song that Bessie Smith wrote called Take It Right Back. And at the finals, we have 10 minutes, and we're told to choose about two songs. And at the finals, I was just so shocked already to even be at the finals that I didn't know really what to do, what to choose. And I thought, you know, I'd probably have to scat because, you know, everyone's going to scat. And I'm, you know, that's the way to show that you have a good ear. And so I was freaking out a little bit. And then towards the end of my decision-making process, I decided I'll just sing what I like to sing, which is, you know, lyrics and something that has an interesting story to it. And so I chose a song called If This Isn't Love, The Whole World Is Crazy. It's kind of a fun song about someone who's completely delusional. And a second song that Billie Holiday used to sing, entitled I Wonder Where Our Love Has Gone. And so I was really, really just trying to convey what the meaning of the song was and what the lyrics were saying. And I was very nervous, but I was at the same time very happy to be able to just do what I wanted and not feel pressured in any way to have to scat or do something like that.
Well, obviously you did exactly what the judges wanted to hear because you won that competition. Thank you. Congratulations to you for your tremendous success there. And it's true. I mean, I've noticed it just in the songs that we've done today that as a vocalist and a front person, you recognized how crucial vocals are to storytelling. And because you're the person, you're telling the story in your own voice and your own way.
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky enough to be able to have words in our mouths while the music is happening. So we have both things that, you know, an instrumentalist doesn't have. So I think it's always nice to use that fully and to use the face and the body in expressing really what the meaning or meanings of the song, you know, are. So to me, that's really what I work on when I learn a new song. And it's the reason that some songwriters are just so important to me, like Cole Porter or like, you know, Rodgers and Hart or anything that Rodgers wrote with anyone. Yeah. He always worked with great lyricists. So it's truly a pleasure and it is actually hard work to really try to get inside the song and try to bring something new to it through the lyric.
Without a doubt. But you always do it so well, and we should do something from the American Popular Songbook, maybe something by Rodgers and Hart. What do you like?
Well, I really like Where or When. I had the first version I heard of it was this version that Peggy Lee sang with, I think it was Benny Goodman, and it is just so amazing, and it's so heartbreaking, and at the same time so happy, and it's just a mixture of so many things, and I really love that song. So
I would love to perform it with you.
Yeah, great.
Like this before, we looked at each other in the same way then, but I can't remember where or when. The clothes you're the clothes you wore, the smile you are smiling, you were smiling then, but I can't remember where or when. Some things that for the first time seem to be happening again. And so it seems we happened for the first time seem to be happening again, and so it seems we met
Cecile, that was absolutely exquisite.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I am so proud to share a stage with you.
Oh, gosh, no. It's very nice.
You phrase so beautifully. It's so easy to follow you. It's so easy just to watch you and to see, okay, she just took a breath. That she's going to hold that note for 14 seconds. Oh,
oh,
my God.
No, no. You do. But thank you.
Oh, it's just dazzling and exciting and just thrilling to listen to and to play with you. You know, I've always heard that you should do what you love and the success and money will follow. And I think you're living proof that do what you love and I love what you do, but do what you love and maybe a Chanel ad will follow. I understand that you've sung on one and it's been very, very good.
Yes, I actually was recommended by a singer in Paris who had heard me in a concert, and she had this friend who was recording for the Chanel advertisement of one of their perfumes, and so she recommended me because he was looking for someone who could sing Taking a Chance on Love, so... I went and I recorded it, and it was it's just a 15-second spot, but it took us about an hour to record it because he had to. It was very weird because I had never worked like that before, where certain words had to be more emphasized than others, and there were different time signatures, and it was just 15 seconds, but we had to do maybe like 10 versions of it until it was really right for that commercial. And I remember hesitating a lot, saying, really, am I going to do an ad for a company? Like, was that what I'm going to do now? And I thought that it'd be such a really interesting experience to see what that work is like. And I would definitely do it again.
Yeah, you should be very proud of your performance there. But it is a different thing. It is not really in the now and in the moment. They want to make it sound like it's in the now or in the moment. But it's actually, they do have to do all kinds of tweaks and, they make it fit the picture.
They're thinking about the product and how they can get people to buy the product. And when I sing, I don't think about that type of stuff. So I'm thinking about, the story, Taking a Chance on Love and, that type of stuff. And they're actually thinking about how to get people attracted to that product. So it was very interesting to kind of see a song that I had already sung many times in a completely different light.
Well, the sound of your voice was the lure that they needed to draw people in and to want to get this tantalizing cologne, which they cannot live without.
Oh, well, thank you. But probably the model also helped a lot.
I think the reaction to your music is extraordinarily favorable on everywhere you travel, on both sides of the Atlantic. I mean, I know you've appealed to people, obviously, in France and here in New York. I mean, your creativity has appealed to Wynton Marsalis. Let me read a quote. She has poise, elegance, soul, humor, sensuality, power, virtuosity, range, insight, intelligence, depth, and grace. That's Wynton Marsalis. Tell me how you two met.
Wow. That's a crazy quote.
How about it?
That's nice. Thank you. Well, I actually met Winton in Paris. We're managed by the same person, Ed Arendelle. And a couple months into talking with Ed, he offered to introduce me to Winton and maybe have me come up and sing a song with him. And that first time that I met Winton and sang for him, he had a lot of really great advice for me, which I had not heard before. And I went out of those 15 minutes of sound check and of that concert with a lot of new information and new things to work on. And about a year or 6 months later, when I saw him and he had noticed that I had actually worked on the stuff that he told me to check out and had really delved into you know, the things that he had told me, even in those 15 minutes, he was actually really, really happy. And he told me that, you know, it's great because you're a serious musician and you're here for the music and you're in it for the music. So it was a really great experience to work with him, and to keep working with him is going to be such a great pleasure and such a learning experience for me.
You can tell that you really mean it. I would love to do another song. What do you think? Maybe dig in the Wayback Machine. Go way back.
Yeah. Let's do something by Bessie Smith. We could do something called You Ought to Be Ashamed. This was written by Porter Granger. He actually wrote Tain't Nobody's Business If I Do. He wrote a song called Fat and Greasy. He also wrote a song called Soul and Body. And this one, You Ought to Be Ashamed, is a fun and angry tune. So maybe we could try that.
I love Bessie Smith. Let's do it.
Shame.
Beautiful job, Cecile. Wow, fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Soulful. Bessie Smith, man. I mean, she was so, so ahead of her time.
Yeah. She was out of any time. She was out.
I mean, think about how women were treated in the 1920s and how just the general place in society compared to now. To say that kind of stuff in the 20s.
Yeah.
That's brave.
Yeah, she lived a very kind of bohemian lifestyle. She did a lot of stuff, experimented a lot of stuff. And she was definitely a tough cookie, so you know, if anyone had a problem with it, they could just meet her fist, you know. No, really though.
Well, a lot of the vocalists from those days even accompanied themselves on piano at times. I mean, I know that Sarah Vaughan played some piano. Carmen McRae certainly played some piano.
Yeah. And I know Blossom Dearie. One of my all-time favorite musicians.
That's a very special skill, isn't it, playing piano and singing?
It really is. It really is. I actually, my teacher in France always tried to push me to accompany myself at the piano. And I do sometimes play a little something at concerts, or I'll play one tune or at the piano. And actually, when I work at home on material, I always accompany myself. And it's not easy, but it's fun.
I strongly encourage you to play and accompany yourself. I think that'd be fantastic.
All right. Well, maybe I'll give that a try.
So what would you do if you were going to accompany yourself on piano right now and sing? What would you perform?
I guess I would do Jitterbug Waltz, Fats Waller piece.
That would be fantastic.
All right.
I would love to hear that.
I'll try that out. Getting on, the band is getting slow. The crowd is almost gone. And here we are still dancing. Nothing to do but waltz. Our feet can barely move, my legs are yelling, whoa. But we're in such a groove that love is still advancing. Nothing to do. Can't suggest that we could go on jitterbugging. We've nothing left for moves more strenuous than hugging. But we don't need much room to gently cut a rug in, we two. From head to toe, my body's feeling loose and warm and kind of supple. Nothing to do but waltz. The minutes slip away, my arms just won't let go. I think I'd like to stay till we're the only couple. Nothing to do but waltz. You never know how far this sort of thing will get you. We're not as tired as we would like to think, I bet you. You'd stay up half the night with me if I would let you. So come, let the waltz play again.
See, that wasn't so hard, was it?
I mean, it was a little bit stressful, but...
It's beautiful. See, I can't tell. See, maybe you're feeling it. Maybe that pushes you to play it prettier or something. But whatever you're doing, it's exactly right. It's fantastic. I love it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I actually recorded that on my second album. It's the first song that I recorded with me by myself at the piano. So it was a lot of fun. It was very stressful too, but it was cool.
I love when you accompany yourself. You sound fantastic. The only thing missing is me on that one. I wish
yeah.
I could play for you.
Yeah, I know, but maybe we could play one more.
Yeah, you know, I can't believe the time is already up. We're already almost at an hour, and we have time for one more song, and I would love to do just something from the American popular songbook. What do you like? What do you feel like doing?
How about we do A Fine Romance?
Love A Fine Romance. Jerome Kern, Dorothy Fields, Swing Time, 1936. One of my favorite movies.
Great.
A fine romance with no kisses. A fine romance, my friend. This is. We could be like a couple of hot tomatoes, but you're as cold as yesterday's mashed potatoes. The fine romance, you won't nestle. A fine romance, you won't wrestle. I might as well play bridge with my old maid aunt. I haven't got a chance. This is a fine romance, a fine romance, my good fellow. A fine romance, I will take jello. You're calmer than the seals of the Arctic Ocean. At least they flap their fins to express emotion. A fine romance with no quarrels. A fine romance with all morals. I've never mussed the crease of your blue serge pants. I'll never get the chance. This is a fine
That was so much fun. I love playing for you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to sing with you.
Thank you for being here, Cecile.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with John Weber. and his guest, Cecile McLaurin-Sauvant. This program is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio and is recorded at Hirsch Studios in New York City, with post-production in the Elaine T. Freeman Suite at ETV Radio in Columbia, South Carolina. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Andrew Shire, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production manager Grant Jackson, production assistant Laura Hunsberger. The executive producer is Kobe Hennessy. The executive in charge is Linda O'Brien. Special thanks to Anya Grundman, director and executive producer of NPR Music. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the Friends of Piano Jazz, NPR member stations, and NPR. Support for NPR comes from NPR contributors, which include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, presenting the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Winners are at macfound.org. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR.